Hey friend, are you struggling to find consistent paid speaking gigs? Do you want to know the exact 6 steps that you can take to find and book more paid speaking opportunities in 2024? Well, we want to make that easy for you. We've created a new free resource with the help of Dan Irvin, one of our highly successful speakers on our team. Dan has booked over $100,000 in paid speaking gigs in the last few years, and his 6-step process is going to help you maximize your chances of getting booked and paid to speak in any industry. You're going to learn how to get started prospecting, master discovery calls and proposal emails, and so much more. All you got to do is go to thespeakerlab.com/steps, and we're going to send you this 18-page guide straight to your inbox. Again, that is thespeakerlab.com/steps, and you're going to get that free guide. Hey, thanks for listening. You're awesome. Hey, what's up, friends? Grant Baldwin here. So great to have you with us for episode 352 of the Speaker Lab podcast. Today, I got my friend and friend of the program, Ron Tite, joining us for his 3rd time on the show. So good to have him back with us today. This guy is just a hilarious guy, one that is really, really full of wisdom and nuggets of knowledge. And I think you're going to enjoy today's show. Now, if you know anything about professional racing, then you're probably familiar with the challenge of a driver being caught in a corner. And so Ron's going to take this concept today of a year of global mayhem and how speakers can get out of the corner and then find that straightaway. Ron unpacks so much in this episode. You're going to love what he has to say about embracing your audience, working within limitations, and he's going to talk about what he's learned during such a crazy year with virtual speaking. Now, he's really adjusted well to virtual speaking. He's going to walk us through exactly what he's done to figure out technology, why he's prioritized content, and where he sees the future of virtual speaking going. So you're really going to want to stick around for all of that. It's always fun to have Ron on the show. He's got a ton of great insight to share. So let's get right into it. Here's my conversation on finding the straightaway with Ron Tite. Enjoy. What's up, friends? Grant Baldwin here. Welcome back to the Speaker Lab podcast. Today, we are joined by our friend, Mr. Ron Tite, who you can't see him right now. I can't. He's getting emotional and choked up right now. He took a drink right as I'm starting the intro here. you good?
I'm good. Yeah, I went down the wrong.
Have you ever had that happen where like you're backstage for a gig, they're announcing you, and like as they're announcing you, like some, like your fly gets stuck or like the mic starts messing up or you choke on a drink? Have you had anything like that?
I've totally had it. In fact, I did a gig in front of, I think it was like 2,000 people, and I went out with my fly down and it was 20 minutes into the speech before I realized it was down.
How did you realize it? Or people,
your listeners can't see me, but I was like, you know, when you're like, you go to gesture towards the screen,
uh-huh. Yeah,
you know, and you're like, that's why that thing. And then when I turned around and I was on ICANN or on iMac. Okay.
Yep.
So my image was actually the thing that was on the screen, and I turned and I could see it. And then as I came around, my hand brushed the front of my pants. I'm like, is that? And so, you know, I've got a background in comedy. So there's a rule in comedy that says like, you never ignore the reality of the room.
Yeah.
And so the only way to deal with it is to call it out.
Yep.
And so I just paused. I walked down off the stage directly in front of the front row. And I said, it was as if I was whispering, but obviously I was mic'd the whole room.
Right.
And I was like, has this been down the whole time? And people are like, mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. I zipped it up. And then I said, you have one job. If the speaker comes out and the fly is down, you do a hand gesture, you motion up, you just go, you know, come on, you work with me here, you know. So, and then I moved on. And I think that whenever that happens, that's the way to deal with it. If you do swallow something bad, you know, you hit the stage and you're still coughing, you go, I am so excited that I'm out of breath. I'm coughing to catch my breath. That's how excited I am to be here.
But as a speaker, I don't know about you, and I assume this is the case, like you love those raw, real moments that this is not scripted. This is not planned. This is one of those, like you had to be there moment. We all experience this together. You can't recreate that. It's not a bit that you do that every time you walk out, you fly down. It's just something that happened. And the audience feels like, oh, we got to see behind the curtain for a second.
Yeah, and
we got to see that 100%. We got to see like the sleight of hand. We got to see how his hands messed up, you know, and we got to see it like that. I love those moments for an audience.
Yeah. And I think when, if you can, if it makes you laugh, like, and you have a genuine laugh about what just happened, I think that shows that, I think it shows a couple of things. I think it shows that you're a real person who's not more important than the material, or you're, you know what I mean? Like, you're just, you're totally there. But it also means you're so dialed into, you're so present in that room with them that it's not like you have a script and you're just doing the script. You're so present that that emotionally moved you in a funny way too.
Yeah.
And it becomes this shared experience between speaker and audience that sometimes we don't always have that, because they can feel like, ah, you've, like, I've seen this speech before. Like, I know you've done this bit before.
Right.
So it's kind of, it breaks down the fourth wall, as our acting friends would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, this was, none of this was planned for this type of intro. Right, so we actually, this is your third time back on the show. We had you back in episode 45, episode 250, which were years ago.
Yeah.
So good to have you back. A lot has happened since then. So one of the things I want to go back to is you are a very, very successful speaker. You're up in Canada. You do a lot of speaking in Canada, but as well in the US, all over the world. And you do like big, big time, like corporate gigs, association gigs, as a keynote. You're doing how many pre-COVID, how many keynotes are you typically doing a year?
Well, in 2019, I think I did 72.
That's not, and like big stages, like you're going to undersell it, but I'm going to go to bat for you here that like, these are like legit audiences, legit venues, legit clients that you're working with. So talk to us about.
I don't do many freebies.
Yeah.
Maybe do five free, and I only do free if it's for a not-for-profit association who could use it, or for a friend, you know, like when Robert Rose, Ryan Hanley called, like, happy to help out.
Yeah, totally. So with someone who is, their business is nearly 100% based upon speaking to large crowds in large settings, last March, 2020 hits, and business, we were talking a little bit before we started recording, just kind of catching up, and sounds like within a day, like for so many speakers, things just disappeared, went away.
Yeah.
Talk us through, what was that day? What was that week like? And how did you think about that for the next couple of weeks? Because you also mentioned that world shuts down, business is affected, and then a dramatic personal thing happens as well. Can you talk us through that?
And spoiler alert, it wasn't a heart attack, although it should have been. But so, you know, I do, I have an agency. So that is kind of one side of the business. And then speaking is a separate revenue stream. And I'm exclusive with a bureau. So that's kind of to paint the picture. So that means like my contracts and everything are all, everything is through the bureau, through Speaker Spotlight, who are a wonderful group of people. And so within those contracts, there is something called the force majeure clause, which is, hey, if you book Ron for whatever date and it's a week before, you can't cancel. I'm sorry, you can't, you can cancel, but you're still paying full. Yeah. The only time you get out of that clause is the force majeure clause, which is an act of God. And if there is an act of God, then that signals that you can get your money back. And you can cancel. So leading up to, stuff is happening, no one was really canceling because they wouldn't get their money. They still have to pay me. Because there was so much that was unknown. But the second the World Health Organization declared a global pandemic, that is a force majeure. That is an act of God. Suddenly everybody can get their money back. And it was fast and furious.
Yeah.
People like cancel. So the sound of opportunity and revenue being flushed down the toilet in one afternoon by the afternoon of the 12th. And so that was the afternoon of the 12th, the evening of the 12th, as my entire world has been rocked. And by the way, all this is going on and I don't know what's going to happen with the agency.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a 25 person agency. I don't know what's going to happen there either. The evening of the 12th, my wife and I go to a hospital and we have a baby the next morning. We have our second child.
Not now, honey.
Just, can you breathe a little harder? Just
give me a minute. I've had a busy day.
So my wife, Grant, as a father of three beautiful children, you will appreciate this. My wife kind of, you know, got up at, it was 3 in the morning, when she got up and said, we have to go to the hospital, I was still up. And she goes, why are you still up at 3 a.m? And I said, because I'm doing the math. Mm. Because everything had changed. And I'm like, so I'm planning financial scenarios for us as a family and all this, yeah, because my wife was also going on a mat leave, you know, at that point. So, yeah. And then, so the baby was born at 9:45. I was on a phone with my banker at 11 a.m. That day. So that just everything completely went sideways. So it starts with survival, right? Of like, I got to make sure that my people are safe and everything. So we, you know, deployed everybody virtually right away. We supported our people as best as we could. We streamlined our team to make sure that we could, you know, cover off our accounts that we had. And we stopped all kind of, oh, these innovative initiatives that were, no, it's about survival right now. Yeah. And so I dialed back into the agency right away. And that went very smoothly and remarkably well. And we had a fantastic year. So that all went well. From a speaking standpoint, I, within a week, realized, okay, obviously virtual is going to be a thing. Within 2 weeks, we as an agency put out a white paper called Brand in the Time of COVID. So we like right away, like, what are our clients going to do? What do they need to do? We put this huge report together. Most of it was done by our chief strategy officer, Daniel Langer Hack. So we did that. So I know a lot of people like rush to figure out the tech. I did the opposite, which was I rushed to figure out the content. And I'm like, what is like, whatever. It could be a phone call. What content am I delivering? Because I can't go through. You've seen my, you know, some of my speeches. Yeah. I can't go through and talk about hotel customer service.
Nobody's.
I can't do that. I can't talk about airplanes.
Right.
It's totally irrelevant, even though they're great examples. So it became, I need to find, like, I rushed into, like, who's doing what? Like, what brands are surviving? What are leaders doing? Like, everything. So I just really focused on that. And then I started to explore opportunities, and because I needed to force myself into a gig to apply my thinking to a specific organization, mm-hmm, to go like, what should you do from a speaking standpoint? We were doing it with agency clients. And so I started working with a big bank in Canada and went into their HR and I was like, okay, let's figure this out together. Cause I want to figure it out. You want to figure it out. And I stumbled on something that was a really interesting metaphor. And I don't know how I stumbled on it. I think I was watching TV and I saw an interview with like Jackie Stewart. And he said, the exit from the corner is more important than the entry. Hmm. And a light bulb went off and was like, oh my God, we're in the middle of a corner. And so I started to explore the world of car racing and how does a professional driver go from a straightaway into a corner? Because the thinking is like anybody can win in a straightaway. And so the metaphor immediately made sense to me of like, oh, we've been in a straightaway for a long time. You gun it. Yeah. You just put the pedal to the metal. But what does a driver do when they enter the corner? How do they handle that? So the first thing a driver does is they slow the car down. And the reason they do that is to gain control of the car. So they go from the state of chaos to a state of composure, right? And mm-hmm, it's like, okay, I just need to make sure the car doesn't skid out. But, and this was the most interesting point that I confirmed with, you know, Preet Banerjee, right?
I don't think I do.
You know, yeah. Preet? So Preet's another speaker. He's a finance speaker, good friend of mine, great guy, who's also a race car driver.
Okay.
He's just one of those brilliantly good-looking and charming people. And you're like, oh, you're a race car driver too. Okay, great.
Sure.
And I checked with him and I said, I thought I heard somewhere that to win in race car driving in Formula One, a great driver accelerates in the middle of the corner. And he goes, yeah, that's the trick, is that the faster you can, like, soon as you get control of the car, you accelerate, mm-hmm, so that you accelerate out of the corner. And then boom, that was my metaphor. Yeah. And I was like, I'm just going to explore that. And so created this idea of C2C leadership, of going from a state of chaos to a state of composure, and then reintroducing chaos by accelerating, So that composure doesn't become complacency. Because that's what I started to see was suddenly people, like really early, people were saying, well, you know, this is what we're doing now. And I was like, no, like this is such an opportunity. And so C2C leadership. And within 2 weeks, I had that platform.
Wow.
And then I just started to build around it of like with other things, you know, with other examples and other brand examples, and other stories that I were inspired by, and just continued to build it over time. Then once I had it, I pulled an, I like literally haven't done this since university, I don't think. I pulled an all-nighter and I just said, I'm going to figure out the tech. I'm going to figure out the tech in one night. And I just stayed up and I played with Ecamm and I watched tutorials and I tested and I tried different microphones. And so again, your listeners can't see this, but the reason I've got this white wall behind me is because I use Ecamm Live, which brings slides, you know, over here. Yeah. And so that I can be like a newscaster. And so I just figured out the tech in one night and reached out for help. And, you know, there's so many, like people, Mitch Joel was just so incredibly helpful because he geeked out on it too. And then there I was. And then I was ready to deliver updated content with an updated approach and technique.
Hey friends, do you know the 5 steps to book more gigs and get paid as a speaker? Well, if not, listen up, because these same 5 steps that helped me to grow a 7-figure speaking career are all laid out in great detail in my latest book, The Successful Speaker, 5 steps for booking gigs, getting paid, and building your platform. Whether you want to speak as a side hustle or your dream is to become a full-time professional speaker, I know what it takes. I share all of that with you in this definitive step-by-step roadmap. Let me be your guide. Learn from my mistakes. Get paid what you know you're worth to share your unique message on stage. If you want to read the first chapter for free or just check out the book, go to thespeakerlab.com/book. Again, that is thespeakerlab.com/book. Check out your copy of The Successful Speaker. Well, I think one thing that's so important for speakers to understand at whether when in or out of a pandemic is that when you're playing with a story or you're playing with an idea, you're playing with an educated guess until you get in front of an audience. So the whole metaphor you line out is like, this makes a ton of sense, but does this make a ton of sense to the audience, or does this work, or me explaining it to someone else? And so you have to get in front of people. And in fact, I remember from maybe the last episode that we have, or even just conversations we've had, you talk about this idea of, I don't remember what you call it. The new two. Yes.
Yeah.
So maybe as a refresher, explain that concept and maybe because I can really see like how that relates to this of going like this is new content and I think it makes sense, but I don't know until I get in front of an audience. So walk us through what that new two means.
Yeah. So the new two is when I hear speakers say I'm writing a new speech, I get hives. Like they're saying, like, oh, I'm giving a speech in 2 weeks, I'm writing and preparing a new speech for that. I go, what are you talking? That's like Chris Rock going, oh yeah, I'm shooting a new Netflix special. And like, I'm just writing that material. Like, what? You can't do that in one sitting. You can't just write a speech.
Doesn't work like that.
Doesn't work like that. You need to develop stuff over a year, like until you're like, and that's what comedians do, right? They tour, they write a base material, then they start to tour it and they tweak it and they tweak it and then tweak it and refine it, refine it, refine it over a year. And then they end up with the special. They're ready with the special. So to do that, I like to think that I'm always writing the next speech. Every day I'm writing the next speech because I'm always reading and I'm always writing. And so if I read an article in Harvard Business Review and I think like, oh, I'm going to share this out to my group, to my quote unquote community, whatever, wherever that is. What I do is I then editorialize that article and say, this is really important because of paragraph 6. And I like this idea and I disagree with this. And let's say I share that to LinkedIn. I then take my speaker notes that I've, the editorialized notes, I create a slide in the moment. And if it's a key graph, if it's a key quote, if it's something that I've written, if it's an image that demonstrates what the idea is about, I design the slide right there in the moment. I put my notes into the speaker notes and I put the slide into a bucket. Authenticity, leadership, you know, whatever. I duplicate that. I take it, do the same thing into Scrivener. So I take that, the reference of the article, my thoughts that I share to LinkedIn, and I put that into Scrivener within a similar bucket scheme because I'm always writing the next book too. Mm-hmm. Then the next time I go to do a speech, I look to see what I have put into the buckets. And I choose the thing that's most appropriate for that audience. And I force myself to use it. And I go, I'm bringing this in. This is my new two. It's the new 2 minutes. And every audience that you're before subsidizes a future audience. And they subsidize.
Such a good way to put it.
Yeah, right. Like, so if I'm in front of Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola is subsidizing the IBM speech I'm going to do in 6 months because they're watching me do that 2 minutes for the very first time. Mm-hmm. And it's unpolished and it's imperfect. And I don't even know whether it works. Now, luckily, I've got 58 minutes of other stuff that other people have subsidized.
Right, right.
So now it's like, that's the deal, right? So I go in with the new two, and like you, Grant, you know, like you feel it, even in a Zoom environment, you feel just from your own delivery, whether it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And you follow the chat and you see if there's any comments and stuff, and you go, yeah, there's something there. That two, that could become a 10.
Yeah.
And now you end up with a whole new thing. And so the result is you have buckets that are completely full, so that whenever you go to do another speech, all you're doing is selecting the stuff you've already, your series of new twos from other stuff to go, I'm taking this, I'm taking this, I'm taking this, I'm taking this. I'm doing the 8 minute version of that, the 6 minute version of that, the 3 minute version of that. And when I was live, opposed to alive, when I was delivering live, I would only allow myself the flight to wherever I was going as my prep time. So if I was flying to New York, it's a 45-minute-hour flight. It's like, that's all you got. Because, you know, you can just obsess over speeches get into slide design and you're fixing font size and everything else. Like, nope, you've only got the flight. Yeah. That's all you got.
Interesting. Now, one of the things that you kind of touched on there is when you're trying new material, that you're able to immediately in the moment get a sense of like, this is working or this isn't. So I'm curious, that kind of leads to virtual. You start doing virtual, and there's a lot of upsides to virtual. There's a lot of downsides. It's you can utilize the chat depending on the size of the group. You may be able to see some faces, but ultimately it's not the same. No. So I'm curious how you, as someone who uses a lot of comedy, use a lot of humor, use a lot of story, like your momentum and energy as a speaker is built upon the reaction of the audience. And you do such a great job, engaging with and building that reaction from the audience. Walk us through like what the past year has been like for you. I'm assuming that the majority of the speaking you've been doing has been via Zoom and virtual.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying virtual? Do you feel like it's got a place in the market going forward? Are you wanting to continue to do it? Just give us your kind of experience and views on all things virtual.
So I quite like it. I think whenever you have limitations imposed on you, the first thing that people do in any category or industry is they say, I'm just going to do what I used to do. And I'm just going to slightly adapt it to this, to this thing. There's a great story that I've used as an example of this. Have you ever heard of Bob and Doug McKenzie? They're like,
no, that I have.
Take off, eh? You hoser. It's Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas.
Okay.
And they are probably, you would know them to see them, that the characters, they're probably two of the most famous comedy characters to come out of Canada. They had a movie called Strange Brew it was on SCTV, the original show SCTV. Now the reality of what they did was it's two characters sitting in front of a map of Canada, wearing toques, drinking beer out of a stubby brown bottle, saying things like, take off, you hoser. And the reality is how they created that was that SCTV switched networks in Canada. And when they switched over to the CBC television network, the Canadian Radio and Television Commission told them that they had 2 extra minutes of time and that they needed to produce more Canadian content in those 2 minutes. And SCTV said, screw you. We're all Canadian. We're shooting this in Edmonton. Like, how much more Canadian do they want this stupid thing to be? So at first, like many people did, they said, no, we're not doing it. Screw you. We're going to do what we always do. And then they decided, no, but hold on a second. What if we actually did it? Like, what if we embrace the limitation imposed upon us? They want Canadian content. What's the most over the top, ridiculous Canadian content we could come up with? And then it writes itself.
Yeah.
So I took that approach with Zoom, where it's like, you know, some people are like, I like to stand. And I'm like, no, I'm not standing. And some people are like, I wear a blazer. I'm not wearing a blazer in my basement in front of it. No, I'm not doing that. So I sit down. So I embrace the limitation of it. And so I adapted my performance style to be less animated, but also I used the space more. So I would use the microphone like this where I would come in, or I use the camera, you know, where I go deep. The other thing it's a less animated version, but knowing that this is all that people are seeing, they're just seeing head and shoulders.
Yeah.
And so I can cock an eyebrow and everybody sees it.
Yeah.
So I can get way more subtle with my interactions. The other thing is that I'm way more intentional. It's almost like I'm an actor opposed to a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Because an actor knows the way a comedian would deliver this line, and they're not delivering a line with a live crowd, but an actor would be able to do it.
Yeah.
So it's a big shift from going from, I'm not a comedian who's reading the room and everything else. I'm an actor who is delivering lines the way a comedian would deliver them. So, you know, I'll give you an example. There's a joke that I reference. I talk about my kids, and then I talk about the year 1970. This paper came out in 1970, and I said that was the year I was born. And then I immediately go to, I know, right? Some of you are sitting there, you're like, how is this guy 51? There's no way. He looks like he's 35, right? And I go, I know, because it's a DIY haircut. That's why. And then I'll say, some of you, you're kind of going like, how the hell does a 51-year-old have a newborn? And then I'll literally turn away from the mic, away from the camera, and go, and I act as if I'm them. And I go, second marriage. You want to bet this is second marriage, right? And so that's the way that would be delivered in front of a live audience as a comedian, but I have to be so scripted and intentional with it.
Yeah.
In this environment, because I know that's what's going to play. So it's not as natural and it's not as organic. It's way more intentional and way more, the jokes are way more scripted, because there's nothing in the environment that would force me to change the joke.
Right.
Like, oh, you laughed really loud. You didn't get that. Like, you know, like you can't play off anything.
No crowd work.
No. So you're a newscaster.
Do you feel like that your experience on virtual will make you a better speaker live?
Yep. I think so. I think, I hope so. Maybe I shouldn't assume so, but I hope so. Cause I think, sometimes I do let things go, like, oh, I'll just figure it out in the moment. And I hesitate to script stuff out. And I think we need to be intentional with our humor. And sometimes I just think, oh, it'll come to me, or whatever. Like, oh, maybe not all, you know? So yeah, I think so. But I also think it's a different method of delivery.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think what it takes a lot more of confidence, because, you know, with a background in comedy, I've got a massive ego, and I like to hear the applause at the end of a speech, and people laugh, you know, and then the people coming up like, I love that bit about the thing, or a book signing or whatever. And now I go, thank you. And then I just lean in and go click, and, you know, I go back to work. So I look forward to doing both in the unique ways in which they are made for.
We touched on this at the beginning, but you do a lot of events that pre-COVID were great pre-COVID. But I'm curious kind of what you're seeing right now. We're recording this early summer of 2021, and what your kind of sense is. We were talking a little bit before we started recording, you're up in Canada, things are vastly different there.
Yeah.
Still a lot of lockdown relative to the US, where the vaccine is much more widely available. I'm curious kind of what you're seeing. Are you starting to book more and more in-person events? Are they primarily Canadian? For the fall, are you able to do many for the US? What are things starting to come back, or what's kind of your sense right now?
So yeah, things are coming back. I think, you know, and it happened pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like within a month, people were like, all right, we're going to be here for a while. We need to start bringing in people to inspire our folks.
Yeah.
And so I still did 50 speeches in 2020.
All pretty much all virtual.
Yeah. I mean, I had a good start to the year. Yeah. I don't know how many I did, but but I did 50 in total.
Yeah.
So what I'm seeing is it's not back to the, you know, of how robust it was, but yeah, stuff is starting to get booked and full fee in-person stuff. Virtual is kind of sitting at usually 2/3 fee in a lot of cases. And I know some people held strong on that, going like, nope, same IP. I'm not changing my fee. Mm-hmm. I just kind of took the approach that like, you know what I need is I need stage time. I just need stage time because it's new content, new method of delivery. Every opportunity, I'll take it. Now I'm a bit more selective. But so I think it's slowly coming back. I think we will see a little bit of both. I think there's going to be a mad rush at the beginning to get back in front of people. I think sales teams want to be together. I think sales trips that have been, you know, delayed, I want to go to Bahamas, you know? And I think that's going to happen. In terms of Canadian speakers going to the US, nothing's going to happen until the borders open.
Yeah.
So I'm supposed to speak at NSA in Vegas in July. And I was like, I'd love to, but I don't think the border is going to be open.
Yeah. Wow. So do you feel like that you will continue to do virtual going forward? Is this just like, it was a good stopgap for the time, but, and it kept me afloat, but I just need to be in front of people? Or how do you see virtual fitting in for yourself long-term?
It's going to be a little bit of both, and I don't know what the breakdown, and I don't think anybody knows what the breakdown is going to be. Part of me says, people are just going to go back to doing in-person stuff because they're so fun. And business is going to rebound. I think there's going to be a lot of budgets available and stuff, to, you know, house hotel people and fly people and stuff. Yep. The other part of me says like, I don't know, now that they've seen what's easy and doable, are people going to want to gather in hotel ballrooms? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm open to it. And, you know, what I really love to do is inspire and inform audiences.
Yeah.
There's 4 million ways of doing that. So I'd look forward to kind of doing all of them.
Ron, I always enjoy chatting with you. There's a dozen other things I could ask you about, but I want to be respectful of your time. So if people want to find out more about you, what you're up to, you have a great website. Where can we go?
You can go to rontai.com. You can go to churchstate.com. Or just connect on LinkedIn or wherever.
Those are the places. Those are the things.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Grant. It's been great to be back.
Indeed. All right, there you go. Hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Speaker Lab podcast. And before you take off, don't forget, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a rating and review within iTunes. We read every single one of those. It helps other people to find the show. Listen, we don't charge anything for you to listen to these. We don't have any ads or anything. We do this because we want to serve and support speakers like you. So one small favor we ask of you is that you would leave us some type of a rating and review. And again, we really, really do appreciate that. If you're looking for more help, support as a speaker as you build and grow your business at whatever stage you're at, don't forget to check out thespeakerlab.com, thespeakerlab.com. We got a ton of free resources and tools over there. So again, check it out over at thespeakerlab.com. All right, my friends, that wraps up today's episode. We appreciate you hanging out with us. We'll catch you next time. You're awesome.